When you need expert help and advice on issues affecting your business, NFU Cymru, we're here for you.
Farmers Guardian is proud to work alongside the Rock and Roll Farming Podcast. For all the latest news and features from across the ag industry, head to fginsight.com. You'll also find a wide variety of advice pieces to help you and your farming business flourish.
Want to get to know the people who produce the food that you eat? This is the place. Step this way and welcome to Rock and Roll Farming. Hey everybody, and welcome to Rock and Roll Farming episode 117. I'm your host Will Evans, and tonight I'm heading down to the Royal Agricultural College in Cirencester to talk to agricultural business student Robin Hogg. Robin, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And for a start, it's the Royal Agricultural University now, Will.
Well, yeah, but I'm a Harper graduate, so what's it like to be studying at the second best agricultural based university in the country?
I wouldn't know. You can answer that one, can't you?
Sorry, man.
One instead.
I forgot it was a university now, actually. That's very, very unprofessional of me. Apologies to everyone at the RA, at the REU. Anyway, what year are you in now?
I'm in third year now. I submitted my dissertation last Tuesday.
Wow, okay. Must be a relief to get that finished.
Yes, it was. Very much so. So I'm in third year. So I'm done now, virtually. Just exams left to go.
Fair. What do you do your dissertation on?
I did my dissertation, because it's a business module, it was nothing agricultural, so you won't be very interested, I don't think. it was about whether corporate leaders actually act like the leaders within cults and situations like that, like police forces and cults and forced businesses.
Wow. I bet some of them do, don't they?
Steve Jobs, surprisingly.
Yeah, interesting. All right. But, I mean, has it been an interesting course? Have you enjoyed your time there?
Oh, yeah. It's been lovely. It's really nice to have farm walks in the Cotswolds where you're learning about the businesses rather than being sat in a stuffy classroom in Newcastle or Reading or wherever else.
Yeah, but, and a bit of a different setting, really, the Cotswolds to Northumberland, where you're from.
It's just a lot warmer. The stone's a bit different. People are a bit nice as well.
Yeah, a bit busier, I would imagine. A lot more people around.
It's a hell of a lot busier. Yeah, okay.
So do you think it's an exciting time to be coming into the agriculture industry now for young people?
I think it's a dangerous time to be coming into agriculture. Dangerous in a way of people getting replaced by machines and things, aren't they? But if you're good at tech, I think it's a really exciting time to be coming in. Like when you go to Llama and things and you see all these actually really exciting new stuff that they're doing, and down at Harper Adams they're doing that hands-off acre or hectare, aren't they?
Hands-off acre.
I'm not at the university, I don't know what it is. But the fact that they're doing that and things like that, it just makes you think that whether the people in coming into the industry are actually going to end up with their hands mucky or not.
Yeah, but I guess it brings other opportunities, as you say, with tech, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's really, really interesting from that perspective, definitely. Because you're asking if it's exciting. I think it's very exciting, but maybe a bit scary for some people.
Yeah. Okay, so tell us a bit about yourself. You are from a farming family, right?
Yeah, it's nine generations. I'm the ninth generation of farming family on one side and the sixth or seventh on the other.
Wow. So you're a dyed-in-the-wool farmer.
It's a bit forced, really, isn't it, to come down to Cirencester? My parents were actually from neighbouring farms and were friends when they were younger. So one day decided that it was probably good to merge the farms, I suppose.
Well, it's always good to be practical.
Yeah. No, but they were really good friends when they were younger and they came together as farming families do and decided that they would get married, and they had me, my brother and my sister. Mm-hmm. And my sister's an accountant, so wants nothing to do with farms. And my brother came to the RAU as well. So we all had a lovely time growing up in, as you can imagine, in Northumberland. It's quite rural and rustic and lovely. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of nice fun things to be doing, getting involved in arable farming. And I got some cows when I was little to look after. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about it, you ask about, I don't know about my family, my farming background. I don't know, because it sounds strange, but I don't have another background.
Did you always think you were going to be a farmer then? Did you grow up wanting to be a farmer?
I grew up wanting to be a land agent.
Okay.
The sin that is.
Okay. What, from an early age?
From being about 9 years old, yeah. Did from you? 8 or 9, I wanted to be a land agent.
What do you think inspired that?
I don't know. I really wanted to work in Knight Frank. I think it was probably inspired by seeing people around me. There's been quite a lot of development in Northumberland recently. Mm-hmm. And I think I wanted to know, because my granddad is, this is his famous quote in my family, is he always tells me that the best thing he ever planted was houses. So maybe it was that part of me.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. So what was it that made you decide not to become a land agent?
That was definitely when I was 9 years old, and I ended up having epileptic seizures that led to me being told that I wouldn't be able to lead necessarily a normal life, would have the chance potentially not to be working for anybody else, and would definitely not be driving. So land agency was completely out of the question.
Okay, so did that come completely out of the blue?
Completely out of the blue. I was sat in an ICT lesson with the teacher in year 5.
Okay.
So there was no onset, nothing to start or anything, but here we are.
And you remember that quite clearly, remember it happening?
No, I don't remember any of it. I remember waking up and being told all about it. Wow. I don't actually remember any of it. It's really abnormal if people can remember it, actually.
Okay. So tell us a bit about what it is. What happens?
Well, I have something which is called juvenile microclonic epilepsy.
Okay.
Which basically just means juvenile, as in I got it when I was a child. Mm-hmm. And microclonic is the type of seizure that I have in the part of the brain that it comes from. I don't know the ins and outs of that bit, but...
Yeah, okay.
And it means I've got 4 types of epilepsy, I think, currently. But they find it really hard to make a diagnosis with epilepsy because it being such a strange thing, and mm-hmm. you don't know what's going on and which parts of your brain are actually being targeted when you're having a seizure. So that they don't really know much about it at all. And that's partly why I want people to talk more about epilepsy, because people know so much about heart disease, diabetes, cancers, strokes, and people know absolutely nothing about epilepsy as far as I can tell.
Mm. Was there anything like this in your family history at all? Or
Well, it can come actually from migraines, and my mum gets migraines, so okay. But there's some people on my dad's side have got migraines too, so it could come from anywhere. Although right. They're probably related, considering their farming back, considering the farmers from Northumberland.
I'm not saying anything. And I mean, how dangerous can it be?
Deadly, actually. People don't realise that, I don't think.
Wow, I didn't realise that.
Yeah, no, there's a thing called SUDEP, which is sudden unexpected death from epilepsy, which is basically just that someone can have a seizure that is so large that their brain cannot physically recover, and they just, their heart stops, their brain stops on the floor.
Wow.
And another way that people can, a more common way that people die is having a seizure on your own and something dangerous happening, like hitting your head off a sink or in the bath and drowning.
Yeah.
And my mum found me, and I was unconscious by the time she found me, because I had a seizure when she was putting the washing away upstairs, and I landed with my head in the dog's water bowl.
Oh, jeez.
And she found me nearly drowned in that.
Oh, wow. So it must be a real worry then for your family.
Yeah. I mean, the water bowl's now away from where I could hit it, but you have to change the whole house around to be fitted around that. And that's quite hard to do in a 500-year-old farmhouse.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, does it worry you? Or have you just learned to live with it?
The thing is that if you let it worry you, then you're letting it win in a weird way, I suppose.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, it worries me in a way of me thinking I need to be aware of it, but it's more of an awareness within your head at all times rather than a worry at any point.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think that's a better way of doing it. It's more of a like a natural way of doing it that makes you feel less constrained, I think.
Mm. And can you control it at all?
Yes, my epilepsy is now technically controlled because I haven't had a seizure in over a year, but that takes an awful lot of work.
Okay.
Like not drinking, regular bedtimes, basically being a baby, taking medication at the same time every day and every night, and making sure that you eat correct sized meals at correct times.
Yeah.
So it basically means that you're ruining your life to try and stop yourself from having a seizure.
Yeah.
But that does then mean that sometimes when it's controlled, you get a lot more opportunities, stuff like driving and things.
Cool. So is that the longest time that you've gone without a seizure?
Yeah, it is actually. Since. I'm 15 months free at the moment.
Wow. So that must be, you must feel that all those sacrifices are worth it though.
A little bit, yeah. But then I'm also feeling the pressure of if another one comes on, then I'm starting from day one again.
Yeah, I'm sure. So is there anything that can trigger it, like stress or anything like that?
Yeah, there's quite a lot of stuff that can trigger it. And that's where kind of where the farming comes into it and why I can't really help out as much with agriculture as I'd like to. Because it's not just lights like people think, which obviously then I'd be able to probably do farming. It's things like being really tired, hungry, cold, hot, stressed, forgetting medication, if you get whacked on the head. Anything that's really unusual. And I mean, harvest, I would never be able to cope with a harvest because I would only get 6-7 hours sleep at night.
Yeah.
And I'd be in a machine, which would obviously take a lot of, which you don't want to be crashing on a road.
No, no, I'm sure. Yeah. That, well, yeah. When you've listed those things, I guess it's kind of,
just off the top of my head, I think as well.
It's kind of all of them, isn't it?
Yeah, it's exactly. It's a harvest basically listed there.
Yeah. Yeah. So
there's ways around that, of course. Like there's other stuff that needs to be done. And I think people forget, especially in agriculture, that when you are harvesting or sowing or spraying or whatever you're doing, there's often someone doing something elsewhere.
Of course, yeah.
Like I've worked in a grain store at Hartley Mains Farm, props, just up the road from me 2 years in a row. And it just means that I would start a reasonable time because obviously I've got to wait for the combine driver to get out and the grass to be, well, the plants to be getting ready to be cut and for the first trailer load to be in before I need to go to work. And I would leave about 10 o'clock, start about 10. So 12-hour days is a lot easier than 16, 17-hour days on a machine.
Yeah.
And that's in grain storage. So if anything happens to me, all I'm going to do is fall half, well, a few foot and hit the concrete.
but it's still not great, is it?
But, no, it's not great, but it's something that's a lot easier to be done. And if someone has controlled epilepsy or quite controlled epilepsy, it's something that they maybe should not think about, but it's ways around stuff. And things like washing machines during the day which aren't being used and prepping machines and things like that are really, really good. Or if you're working with animals, you know, sheep are quite a good one to be working with epilepsy, or pigs.
Mm-hmm.
Cows less so because of the size of them, but
yeah.
But there's so much stuff you can do that people don't actually think about, I think.
Yeah. I mean, you're obviously quite positive. I mean, it's coming through. I mean, you're obviously getting on with it, but you know, you have had to accept you can't do what you maybe would have liked to have done.
Oh, well, I wouldn't want to be a land agent anymore. Don't worry.
No, but does it ever get you down at all?
Yeah, it does actually. One of the things that comes with a lot of epilepsy medications that most people don't realise is actually depression and anxiety.
Okay.
Which I know people have talked a lot about with the farming community because of loneliness and a lot of farmers feeling like they don't want to talk about stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't realise that it also comes with a lot of medications for neurological conditions like epilepsy or, a lot of things really.
Yeah.
But obviously the one I would know about is epilepsy. And it can give you depressive episodes and things. And I think the main thing is being aware of yourself and how you feel on a normal day and understanding that you're not having a normal day if you're having a depressive episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's been a lot of stuff recently, hasn't there, in the press and things about we need to talk about this with male suicide rates and things.
Uh-huh.
And it's especially true in agriculture.
Yeah.
Which is an awful topic, and I'm sorry for bringing that one up. But.
No, it's absolutely true. I mean, I guess with your condition, it's quite important to have a good network of friends and family around you, isn't it?
Definitely, yeah. I need lifts.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, yes, I was just gonna say that because, you know, when you're at home living in a rural area like Northumberland, not being able to drive is a huge thing because you've got to, you've got to cover distances, haven't you? So it's a real problem, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the same with the Cotswolds, really. But at home, I don't live anywhere near a bus route or anything because obviously I have to walk to the edge of the farm and then find the bus route from there. And there's not many people trying to get on that bus, I must admit.
No. But now you've gone 15 months, did you say? How long does it have to be before you can be cleared to start learning to drive?
I think, well, it's currently being processed by the DVLA and they might reject it, but hopefully in the next few weeks I might get a provisional licence through.
Wow, that's exciting.
It is really exciting, but I'm not putting any pressure on them.
No, sure. No, but you, if all going well, though, you must be really excited to learn to drive.
I am, yeah, but I'm moving to Oxford, so the middle of Oxford is hopefully going to be a lot easier to get around than near Blyth, the coast of Northumberland.
Yeah, I'm sure. But an organisation that's helped you quite a lot with the epilepsy is the Royal Agricultural Benevolent Institution. Perhaps you could just tell us about their involvement.
They're all so lovely. I actually did have personal independence payment for a number of years, actually, for epilepsy, because it's supposed to be one of those ones that you just generally get it for. Mm-hmm. And it was taken away from me. And we reapplied saying that I am either living in a very rural area at home or I am at university where I also need help because I don't have my family unit looking after me. Mm-hmm. And it was a really stressful time and we were all stressed about it and it was actually awful. And my mum contacted the RABI through, I think, I don't actually know who recommended it. I think it might have been a solicitor recommended it to her. And they helped us with writing letters and calming us down and making sure we were speaking to the right people. And they were absolutely fantastic. And they put me on the front cover of their November edition, which was very exciting.
Wow.
And they were just... every question we asked was not stupid.
Uh-huh.
They were absolutely lovely, and I don't know if that's a silly way of putting it, but they just helped out in any way that they actually could.
Mm.
And I would recommend them to anyone who maybe feels like they don't know what they're doing, not necessarily in regards to epilepsy, with they give out a lot of care packages and they help a lot of people, or they can help you move house. They honestly help people do so many different things that maybe don't even cost money. It might just be difficult for you to manage.
Mm-hmm.
Like writing letters, that obviously doesn't take up a lot of time, but it was just that we didn't know how to do it and they knew how.
Yeah.
And they were absolutely first class in everything that they did, so much so that my mum's now on the Northeast Committee. She goes to all of their stuff now and helps them raise money.
Fantastic. No, they're an incredible organisation, aren't they?
They are.
Yeah.
And they're very undervalued, I think, by agricultural people, to be honest.
Well, we'll give them a good shout out now anyway.
Yeah, I think, well, not undervalued, but a lot of people don't even realise that they're there to help, I suppose.
Yeah, I think perhaps people don't realise quite the depth of work they do, as some of the things you've just mentioned there, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've mentioned that you've done a lot of work on your own farm and neighbouring farms. Luckily, you do seem to enjoy it, though.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. I love working at home with mum and dad. It's great. And my brother. Sorry. Forgot about him for a second. No, it's really good because it's not just arable farming that we do. We do. We've diversified into conservation stuff. Like my parents mainly make wild bird food and pigeon corns out of the stuff that we grow and obviously some other random stuff that we can't grow, like millet and things. We've tried growing but it doesn't go very well.
Okay, so how did all that start, the bird food?
A man came to my dad, I don't know who it was a long time ago, it's about the time that I was born, and said that he had pigeons in his allotment and that he wanted some of the stuff mixed together into a mix.
Okay.
And it was some barley and some wheat and things. And my dad did it for him in a cement mixer.
Oh, wow.
And from that's that, really now we've got, we've now got a production shed and a bagging shed and a production team. And we now go out and sell about quite a few tons of bird food every week from a cement mixer.
Fantastic.
It's really cool because we put some really fun stuff in it as well. I'll give a shout out to the farm. It's Laverick Hall Farm, and we make a lot of things that you wouldn't think about doing. Like, we have one that means that there's no waste, so all of the seeds in it are shelled seeds, and we also have one without wheat in, so then you don't get any wheat growing in your garden. We have one specifically for robins and songbirds, which makes me very happy. I'm always in the upsell with the robin and songbird. And we've made specific seeds for different parts of the pigeon season and different types of pigeons. And I'm probably the only 21-year-old girl who went to school in Newcastle, yet can also tell you what's wrong with a chicken by looking at it.
You mentioned the pigeon corns. What is that? What's pigeon corns? What do you mean by that?
All the racing pigeons. Northumberland, I think, is one of the biggest places for racing pigeons, actually.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
So all the racing pigeons, and the best bird in Europe gets fed on our corn.
No way. That is really exciting. Kyle.
Coming in years. Kyle, I don't know what Kyle's bird's called, but Kyle bred this pigeon.
I thought you meant the pigeon was called Kyle.
Oh, no. Sorry, no. I don't know what the pigeon's called, but it's Kyle's pigeons. I know which one it is. Because it was going through a competition in Poland the other day.
Wow, that's really cool. I mean, yeah, I did look on the website, and yeah, and as you say, you've got loads of different mixes, haven't you? And,
incredible. There's four season ones that are for all year round, but we've also got trapping mixes, which is for bringing the birds back quicker. Mm-hmm. Because my dad found out that birds can get addicted a little bit to aniseed. They love the smell of aniseed.
Oh, wow.
So he ended up coating some of the seeds in aniseed, including some of our wild bird foods.
Okay.
So it means that if you have wild birds in your garden or around your garden, if you feed them on this kind of corn, they'll come back to your garden rather than your neighbours.
Oh, wow. That is, wow. A lot of visions of birds hanging out on street corners trying to score some aniseed now.
Oh, yeah. We've had some people coming into our shop saying, I'm so glad you're open today. I've got 30 pigeons sat on my wall staring at my garden. Staring through my kitchen window, and you go, oh dear, sounds a bit menacing.
Wow, that's really interesting. Wow, okay. Yeah. And on the website as well, you've also got a really good blog there where you keep customers up to date with everything you're doing. Is that something that you actively try to do to engage with your customers as much as possible?
Yeah, me and my mum do that actually. I write it in her person's because it doesn't get confusing. We've got a bit of a competitive mind, me and my mother, against whose blogs get better. And currently one of mine is in the lead, so she's very angry about that. But we write some interesting posts. I think they are interesting anyway.
Yeah.
We're writing a lot about our conservation project that we've been doing and stuff like that, because I think that people want to know about agriculture stuff and about farming, because if they're getting held up by a tractor in July or August, maybe if they've read a blog post about it, they might not get so aggy.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I totally agree, which is what I'm trying to do with this podcast. But do you get a good response from that, from the customers?
We definitely do, yeah. We get a lot of people coming in and saying, I saw your blog about this, or I'm going to try different bird food because I read that it's going to get goldfinches in my garden and I love them. And my mum just absolutely feeds off that herself.
Yeah, I'll bet.
I know that she adores it when people come in and have read her blog, unless they come in and they say they've read one of my posts.
Yeah. So you're doing a lot of conservation stuff on the farm, you mentioned. Tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, so my dad's always been one for conservation, as you can imagine, with birds and bird food and being interested in that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And he has put aside 10 acres of land on the farm that we have the shop on to grow a load of new trees, and he's put a woodland in, and the part of the reason they put the woodland in is because he wanted to grow hazelnuts for our shop, and the other reason was because we found out that the main reason for deforestation is agricultural use, and people have been complaining about it online. Mm-hmm. And we thought, you know what, we're gonna shove that to the side and we're gonna put trees in. So we've planted a few thousand trees.
Wow. Okay. How long does it take for a hazelnut tree to come to full maturity?
It'll take, well, at the minute they're about 2 foot tall, so I think they're going to take about another 6 or 7 years.
Wow, okay.
But there's been a serious filbert blight in Canada, which has meant that a load of the trees have died. So hopefully, I'd say hopefully the price will be good, but that's a bit morbid. But it seems seems like it was a good time to be planting them and everything. So they're absolutely lovely. And we've not just put those in as well, because we're worried about the deer and the skylarks and the lovely birds that are there. So part of that 10 acres is actually not trees, because we're not just commercial. So we've made a beautiful like wetland area too.
Okay.
For all the lovely animals.
Okay.
So me and my mum and dad were going investigating and checking out what's been wandering past. And my dad seems to be able to tell what animals been there by the footprints, which is quite fun by the head.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Got some oaks, some laurel, hazelnuts, hornbeams and cherry and loads of other cool stuff's growing. And there's definitely holly because my dog spiked his nose on it. But they're all growing really well. And we've got deer-proof fencing up at the moment, which we're going to take down once the trees are big enough. But it's absolutely, like, it's lovely to go past it because we keep seeing skylarks, like, hovering above it, and we're waiting for them to kind of land. And my mum was there the other day and found loads of eggs in the wetland area.
Oh, that's fantastic. Absolutely brilliant.
So it's really, really nice. And conservation's always been uppermost because when my dad has bags of bird food, when he makes them, he'll make some extra and he goes all over the field and just leaves it around the hedgerows and set aside and just pours it all over, making sure that everything's got enough to eat.
Fantastic. That's brilliant. No, brilliant thing to be involved in, isn't it?
It really is. It's absolutely lovely. And when there's stuff growing that a lot of people are spraying away, my dad just kind of, not in a lazy way, but just loves to leave it and see what happens and see what's growing.
Yeah.
And it's really nice because Northumberland is a lovely county naturally. So it's really nice to actually have some natural Northumberland being pulled out of it. And Harry Baker Creswell, the guy who was involved with the project with my dad, is an absolute tree expert. He came to Siren Setter as well. Sorry. And he has been helping my dad with all the deer-proof fencing and everything involved with it. And it's just a really lovely place to actually walk. And I'm just really enjoying it at the moment, and I keep going there with my dogs.
Yeah. So what's your favourite bird that you see around?
My favourite bird that I see? Well, obviously I should say robin. However, I don't like robins because they're very territorial. I'd probably say the goldfinches. They're really inquisitive, and they all hang around the feeders waiting for me. So I feel like they kind of need me. They're also really lovely to spot because when they're flying, they just look very, very lovely.
Yeah, so.
And the babies are cute too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Favorite bird, really. That question really puts me on the spot. Because if I say something and someone listens to it, and I say something else in the shop, what do I?
I can edit that out. Okay, so what are your plans for the future, Robin? Where would you like to be in 10 years' time?
Well, in 10 years' time, I'm probably going to end up working in marketing and things like that, I think. Mm-hmm. Because of all the stuff that I do with my mum, I do most of the stuff with her on the internet. Mm-hmm. So I do all the farm blog, and I've helped her with the website and all the deliveries and things like that. So I'm hopefully working for some SMEs doing marketing and stuff like that, because we've managed to bring our farm shop and the website to be so much more commercialized, but in a beautiful, like, natural way.
Yeah.
And there's some National Trust properties near me that I'd love to work for. And I just feel like I'd like to be working something that's sustainable.
Yeah, absolutely.
It would seem silly to move from a sustainable, beautiful farm to somewhere like London.
Yeah, definitely. So what is the website called, if anyone wants to check it out?
laverickhallfarm.co.uk, but Laverick Hall is spelled LaverickHall, but I assume you might put a link somewhere.
I will put a link in the show notes. So of course, in your immediate future, you're not only featuring on Rock and Roll Farming this week, but you're also in the Farmer's Guardian mag, which is going out this Friday. How is that?
It's quite exciting, I must admit. I was in with them a few months ago as well. So I'm quite looking forward to seeing this one and seeing how different this one is.
Yeah.
And this one's as a family, so it'd be lovely to see it because it'll explain all about the conservation and all the stuff that my family do as a group, and it'd be really nice.
Yeah, definitely. So who was the nicer interviewer, me or Emily at Farmers Guardian?
I'm not allowed to make a judgment, am I?
One thing we can be sure of, I'm sure Emily was much more professional, but
no, she was wondering about, she had a cup of tea, it was just, we were just having a nice chat.
yeah, so
Emily's lovely though. She's absolutely fantastic. She got all involved. Actually, Emily loves my dogs, so I think that might take. I think she that by that respect, you know, it's hard to choose, isn't it?
No contest. So yeah, people listening, do look out for that this Friday, the 17th of May. Right, okay. So we will end this in the traditional way with the 5 hard hitting questions. If you're ready.
Oh, okay.
Okay, what is your all-time favourite song? And you've already told me that you need 3, so I'll let you off.
I love Bittersweet Symphony.
Okay, great choice. 90s classic. Yep. Were you even born when that came out? I bet you weren't, were you?
No, depressingly. I think I was born the year it came out.
Oh my God, that's so depressing.
It's a great song still, isn't it?
It is a great song.
Every Day I Love You Less and Less by the Kaiser Chiefs.
Okay, yeah, another great song, yeah.
Yeah, and Tank Called Malice.
Brilliant. Well, you definitely weren't born when Tank Called Malice came out, but yeah.
No, I definitely wasn't born at that point.
No, great. So that's one of my favourites. Okay, so describe yourself in... Well, I was going to ask you to describe yourself in 3 words, but you tell me you want to be described in 1 word, so...
Well, yeah, because I couldn't pick a favourite song, so I thought 1 word to describe myself instead is indecisive.
Indecisive. Okay, I wouldn't have thought that.
Oh no, I am definitely.
Okay. All right then. So you are you're on death row for committing a heinous crime. What are you having for your last 3-course meal?
Okay, well, crime and punishment is a big passion of mine. It sounds strange, but it is.
Okay.
So there's a guy called Lawrence Brewer in 2011 who was on death row, and he asked for so many. He listed absolutely, I think it was about 12 or 13 things, and then ate none of it just to prove his sass and control over the judicial system. And that's me, just seems like the best thing to do. So, nothing.
Okay, awesome, hardcore. Okay, if you could have a conversation with any type of animal, which one would you choose?
Obviously, a tortoise, to ask him about like the past.
Ah, yeah, okay, cool, yeah, because they live like 100 years, don't they?
Assuming it's an old one. I don't want like a 3-year-old tortoise, that's just not good enough. I want this old tortoise.
I could imagine it being a very sort of chilled out conversation. So, yeah.
Slow conversation, slow
yeah,
chat.
Definitely. Okay, lastly then, what's your favourite ag social media account to follow?
I love farming.uk on Instagram because they're awesome videos of sheep.
Mm-hmm.
But I also have to say my mum's Instagram account, which is for the business again, which is for Laverick Hall. She posts some great posts on it. I made it for her and she's really pleased with it.
I'll follow her afterwards, straight after we've finished. Cool. Robin, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us tonight. I think your positivity is an example to us all and best of luck for the future.
Thank you very much. I hope it was enough stuff to talk about.
That was loads, plenty to talk about, yeah. And to everyone at home, thanks for listening and hope to see you next time. I've been Will Evans, this has been Rock and Roll Farming. Thank you and good night.